And welcome back to Fully Equipped, Golf.com's gear-focused podcast, where you take weekly PGA Tour news and relate it to golfers of all skill levels. I'm Tim Brion, Executive Vice President of TrueSpec Golf, joined by Jonathan Wall, Managing Editor for Equipment for Golf.com. Jonathan, how's it going, bud?
Professor, we're Turski-less for the second week in a row.
Yeah, he's out on the road this week, CJ Cup, 2 weeks in Vegas. So being that we had so much difficulty last week with communications out on the road while out in Las Vegas, we decided to change things up a little bit this week and let Andrew report on a little bit about what's going on that he's seen this week out on tour. And then Jonathan and I will kind of dive in and see which of those topics are of interest to us. But this week should be fun. CJ Cup, Shadow Creek. We all got a peek at Shadow Creek with the match, the Tiger and Phil match last year. Not a lot of notoriety as far as, you know, big events out at that facility, though it's been, you know, highly.
I think they like to keep it that way.
That's right. So we'll get into that a little bit after we get into Andrew Turski's little weekly report. So with that, let's get it over to Andrew and find out what's going on this week.
What's going on, Fully Equipped listeners? Senior Equipment Editor Andrew Turski here, reporting live from the CJ Cup at Shadow Creek this week. I'm currently in a beautiful La Quinta Inn right now on the side of North Las Vegas Boulevard. So first things first, you know, I was pretty fired up to see Shadow Creek since I've never been here. Even though I'm outside of the ropes because of Corona guidelines, honestly, it's living up to every expectation that I had. Super private, perfect condition. The greens are absolutely cooking. They look like they're rolling about a 16 out there. And the course is just awesome. It's beautiful. I think they said it's like $750 to play. So it's obviously for high rollers and, you know, not us broke people. But it does seem like the perfect playground for rich people fresh off the blackjack table. Anyway, boring stuff out of the way. Let's get to some equipment. This week, of course, was the Ping G425 PGA Tour launch. So that's consuming most of the news and hype this week out here on tour. Ping says Bubba's been testing a bunch of different G425 options, including the Max and the LST models. But it sounds like he's settled on the LST version after trying about like 5 or 6 different lofts, they said. Now, obviously, Bubba doesn't have a normal driver. It's Super Pink. He's got the Fire Pink version. And it's got a custom small batch Project X shaft, all pink, of course, except for the tip, which is made out of steel, actually. It's kind of a multi-material shaft. And the grips are the size of baseball bats. You know, I was holding the driver today, and I was thinking about Bryson's driver, how he gets so much credit for using big grips. But Bubba's actually been using pretty big grips for a while now. He's got about 16 to 18 wraps under each grip, I believe. And I have seen on Instagram, everyone's been making the joke, you know, how can you tell it's Bubba's driver? Because obviously he has Bubba written on the crown. You know, love the jokes there, guys. Shout out to you guys. you know, for the rest of us who don't play pink drivers, Ping also has a matte black version, which I assume is going to be the retail colorway. Ping fans will notice that the crowns on the fairways and the hybrids are smooth instead of having turbulators, so it'll be interesting to see what Ping has to say about that switch up. I really don't know much about any of the tech. The only thing I really know is that Bubba and Louie are testing. Tyrell Hatton won with G425. He won with a driver, a 3-wood, and a 7-wood last week, and I saw the photos. I held them in person today. They look great. Ping fans will, I think, appreciate what they see. But, you know, let us know in the comments. We'll see what Ping fans have to say. Now, in non-Ping news, Bettinardi was showing off some new prototype putters today. Apparently, they have new grooves on the face that angle in, like, different directions on certain points on the face. And that's to promote topspin to obviously get the ball rolling a little bit better on the greens. They said it was developed after working with the quote-unquote number 20 player in the world, obviously Matthew Fitzpatrick. He plays with a Bettinardi putter, so I'm assuming that's who they mean. I actually shot photos of Fitzpatrick's backup putter today, which is a custom job that's pretty cool for anyone who remembers the Yes putters, quite similar looking. And finally, Arguably the biggest news of the week is Rory McIlroy continues to undergo driver shaft testing. He's got a new Fujikura Ventus in the bag. As we all saw on social media, he just hit over 190 miles per hour ball speed. Obviously pretty impressive. I was talking to the Fujikura rep today, since him and Rory are still kind of working out the kinks with the shaft. He actually needs about 100 to 200 RPM more spin. I guess that landing angle is something that they're still working on. So I'll be on the lookout tomorrow, but it kind of looks like he is going to stay with the Ventus, being that that was the only shaft I saw on his drivers today. There are telephone booths on holes 9 and 17. I'm not sure if anyone has seen this. It was my first time at Shadow Creek, and I thought they were really cool. Very European of them, which is a nice touch. And with that, let's throw it back to Professor Timmy B and J-Wall. Peace out from Las Vegas.
A lot of great insight there from Mr. Tursky. And I think it's a fun new segment, Tim, especially when one of us is on the road, being able to kind of report on what we're seeing and hearing directly from tour. But let's get into a couple of topics that, you know, you and I wanted to discuss. Which was the one that kind of caught your eye?
So for me, you know, 425, Ping G425 out on tour. It plays into what we were going to discuss this week for Gear Spotlight 2. But just a new product out on tour, obviously Ping drivers. There have been a lot of players that have played Ping drivers successfully, you know, over the last, you know, 10, 15 years. They've always had one of the better drivers in the industry. And it's great to see them come out with new product. Obviously, you know, coming out of the pandemic, there have been a lot of questions about new product launches. And so far, it seems like the industry is largely unaffected as far as the cadence of products. You know, obviously, some of the quantities and supply of some of the products is a little bit different than normal. But I'm excited to see how many guys get this in the bag right away. Also test it ourselves. We actually, you know, with Club Test coming up, Club Test 2021, started to receive some product here at our offices in Scottsdale. And so, you know, had a chance actually this morning to get my eyes on the product for the first time. And so I'll be interested in maybe hitting a couple before anybody else. And let's see how this thing performs. But, you know, specifically for tour players out there, you know, they've really done well with some of these products, especially the LST products that Ping has had. You know, you go back a couple iterations to the G400. A lot of folks say that of the last 5 years, that's probably one of the best one or two drivers that have been produced by any manufacturer. So really excited to see how G425 does that on tour.
And Tyrrell Hatton already won very first week out. He had the new G425 LST, as you mentioned, the low spin product. Also had the LST 3-wood and then a Max 7-wood. Again, going back to, you know, the year of the 7-wood, we got another guy winning with one on tour.
Yep.
It's interesting, Tim, because when it comes to tour launches, you know, the manufacturers don't ever really give us a whole lot of info when it's first out on tour. And a lot of that's just by design. You know, they're worried about working with the tour players. Embargo, the retail embargo is still, you know, a ways off. And so a lot of the things that we are seeing, we're kind of having to guess, like what's going on, you know,
right.
and G410 was an interesting product for Ping just because of the adjustability. I know we're going to get into it a little bit later, but one of the things that I did notice that kind of caught my eye is, you know, they had that CG shifter. You know,
yep.
Ping's been all about forgiveness over the course of their history in the industry. And this is really their first adjustable product where it's moving around weight. So you can do, you know, fade or draw, but it looks like they tightened up that CG shifter.
Yep.
In the back, that track looks like it's tighter. So you can tell that they've been doing some stuff, but it looks like, again, G410 was such a good product. I mean, you don't really want to reinvent the wheel. So,
yep.
Curious to get more on it, but yeah, it looks like they made a couple of, you know, smart tweaks.
There's, I can't get too much into the tech, but having spent some time with the team over there, going through the new product, you know, they've kind of reimagined one of the parts of the golf club when you're looking at the components that make up a club head. And you know, you look at what Callaway did with Flash Face, where they reimagined the depth or the thickness of the face. And then you look at what TaylorMade did, where they reimagined what the bulge and roll characteristics should look like or would look like to optimize, you know, accuracy. For you, Jonathan, what was the one that really stood out?
I mean, it's got to be Rory for me.
Yeah.
You know, it feels like we're dealing with the new professional golf arms race, you know, ever since Bryson.
I don't know if
really,
I would call it an arms race yet, but it's starting to get a little interesting.
It's getting there. It's we're moving that direction. I feel like Bryson was the impetus for this new shift. I mean, distances has not been a topic that distance is a topic we have discussed on multiple occasions on this podcast. And look, you know, Bryson is hitting numbers that are making his peers take notice. And anytime you're, you know, touching 200 plus ball speed, you're going to have guys start to wonder, well, what do I have to do to get there? And we've seen a couple of guys. We mentioned Tony Finau being one of them. You know, Tony's worked on his ping driver and made a couple of adjustments going down and loft to try and pick up some additional distance. Now it looks like we're seeing Rory get in on the action. I mean, Rory is not one of the shorter guys on tour, and neither is Tony. But, you know, they're two of those guys where you watch them swing and you always wonder, you know, it looks like they're leaving something in the tank when they swing. What would happen if they went all out?
Most guys do, by the way. Most guys that are playing out there actually leave considerable amount in the tank, so to speak. So
and that's the thing. You know, they're not going all out. They're trying to get it out there, but it's also about finding the fairway. And you know, that's one of those things where you've had to balance the, you know, distance versus accuracy. And we have seen a lot of tour players now who are kind of passing on the accuracy part so long as they can still bomb it out there because they can gouge it out of the rough.
That's right.
You know, Rory posted some video on social and he showed himself touching 191 mile an hour ball speed, which is pretty significant for a guy.
Well, you know, you look back like 3-4 years ago when Cam Champ came on the scene and Sean Foley, you know, made the statement many times, this is our first PGA Tour player with 190 mile an hour ball speed. Well, not anymore. And this is just going to continue to, you're going to have more and more 190 mile an hour ball speeds. You've got the ball debate. Who was it that I saw? And I think it was in Twitter, was all about the ball here in the last day or so, talking about how rolling back the ball is something that should be considered.
It feels like that's discussed on social media like once a month now.
Yeah, and so I absolutely agree. Like, why would you penalize somebody like Bryson for finding an edge and then specifically developing a plan around attacking that edge? And doing it successfully. Like, it's kind of the, if you were running a business and you saw that there was a place in the marketplace that you could exploit, would you not go do that? I mean, it's the whole point.
Somebody else is going to do it if you aren't.
It's the whole point. I mean, so I have no problem with what Bryson's doing. Now, when you're talking about like players chasing this speed, I was working with a player just last week. We'll leave the name out for now. But this is not a fast speed player by any stretch. And this is a very well-known player. This is 112, 113 mile an hour driver speed per guy. And, you know, halfway through the fitting, I noticed that the golf swing changes a little bit. I'm like, what's going on? And he said, yeah, well, I was talking to this physio the other night, and they said that the key to another 3 miles an hour is take it back faster. And if I increase the speed of my backswing, it'll make my forward swing that much faster. And I was like, whoa, wait a minute. Like, we just changed gears in the middle of a driver fitting.
In the middle of a fitting.
What the hell's going on here? And he's like, yeah, I just wanted to see if I could do it. And I was like, well, actually, the numbers are way better. But, you know, your spin is way higher because you need a different shaft. So going back, tying the bow together with Rory, we see an increase in clubhead speed of 3-4 miles an hour. All of a sudden, the spin climbs. And the product that was, you know, working in that driver no longer does. And you have to consider a different part. So, it's not surprising to see him chasing a little speed and having to change the shaft accordingly.
Change shafts. Yeah, and that's kind of the one thing that I picked up on when I saw the video was, you know, Rory recently was using a counterbalance product. He was using Mitsubishi Tensei Orange.
Yep.
And, you know, that's a product where because there's more weight in the handle, you can throw more weight down in the head. And Rory's used the product before to pick up additional ball speed. You know, that additional weight has been a benefit for him. It's been a benefit for other golfers. I remember Justin Rose used Tensei Orange for a little while. So it's a different profile that he's now using. He was testing out the Fujikura Ventus Black, which is a pretty stiff reinforced product, but it's definitely not a counterbalance product. And you know, people see that he's got a Fuji shaft in there and they go, oh man, Fuji, he's a Mitsubishi guy. For those who are deep gearheads, that's the first thing that I heard. And you got to go back a little ways, but you know, 2016, 2017 was about the time when he stopped using the Fujikura product, but he was a Fuji guy for a while. Yep. He used the Rombax product. And so it's not a completely foreign manufacturer for Rory, but it does make me wonder, you know, is he seeing different characteristics, launch characteristics, spin characteristics? I noticed that one of the spin rates on one of his drives was all the way down around 1800, which is really low. Yeah. And so that's kind of what Tursky mentioned about trying to maybe get a little bit more spin, you know. So we'll see if the Venice product makes it in the bag this week, but it sounds like Rory's just trying to make a couple of, you know, maybe some tweaks. What would you think that he could do, Tim, if he wanted to stay with that product but he wasn't seeing the spin? What are some things that he could do to that driver?
Wanted more spin?
Add a little bit. Yeah, wanted more spin.
Well, you could change the tipping. I assume that the tipping in that's probably an inch and a half at least.
Yeah.
Probably an inch and a half tipping. So first thing I would do is I'd build up this exact same thing that's tipped a little differently, and that way you don't have to change weighting too much. The next thing that you would probably want to consider doing would be going with something with maybe a little more weight, like hot melt back and towards the rear of the head.
Yep.
Consider that at the tour level too, they can dial in loft to the quarters of degrees in many cases. So, you know, they could just go back in Rory's case, because he's one of the best players in the world, Trotty just bring him back to the van, or bring the driver back to the van, and they'll just build him a new driver with maybe a quarter degree more loft with a little bit more hot melt more towards the rear of the club, and see how that works. With a slightly different tip, you know, you do all that together and you can get, you know, 300-500 RPMs of difference in spin, sometimes even more than that. So that would be the first place that you would go. But you know, seeing guys changing their golf swing, changing their approach, that's the really interesting thing, is changing their approach. A lot of guys are willing to start thinking about throwing the rules out the window. And, you know, just because I've been taught this way doesn't necessarily mean it's something that is best for me. I'm going to actually explore a different way to do things. And that 100% is coming from what Bryson has done. So, you know, as far as where does it go from here, I think you're going to see more guys swinging fast. If we have the guys that swing 112, 113 trying to pick up 3 miles an hour, there's no delusions of grandeur thinking that he's going to swing at 140 here. But the idea being, if I can go from 112 to 115, that can change my career out on tour. You know, when you're talking about a player that's really straight, that putts extremely well, being able to go from 275 to 285 to almost 300 yards, that's a huge difference. So it'll
Bryson
be interesting
said
to see.
Bryson said recently, actually it was last week in Vegas, that he watched Happy Gilmore recently.
Oh, God.
And
I saw that
kind of reinvigorated his desire to get faster. I can't wait for him to show up at Augusta and try and run up to the golf ball. And I think that's next.
Wow.
I mean, what
with
else
a 48-inch driver?
With a 48-inch driver running after the ball to just try and pummel it. I think Tim Tucker
a week off and have a big 7'7", you know, fellow.
Monstrosity there.
Yeah, as a caddy. What's going on? What am I going to see next? Bob Barker on the ninth green of Augusta? Like, come on. But, yeah, I mean, I don't have any problem with it. You know, he's playing by the rules and figuring out a way to beat the system. But,
he's making,
you know,
it entertaining. That's all that
so
matters.
So, speaking of entertaining, I'm looking forward to this week. As Andrew mentioned in his tour report, you know, Shadow Creek is a special place. It's just having the spotlight shown on it again. Interesting, you know, between the match and then Seminole this year with the driving for relief and now moving the CJ Cup back out to Shadow, there are a couple of prominent golf facilities that usually shy away from the spotlight that have been kind of put front and center. But Shadow is a really cool spot. Have you ever had a chance to get out there and mess around, Jonathan?
No, I never have. I've always wondered if it's worth staying at the MGM.
Well, you see, that's the thing is now you can actually get out there by staying, you know, at the MGM and paying, you know, the resort. I think it's one of the suites. It's like $750 a night, and you get access out there. And just this last weekend, as you know, I had to make a trip out to the Shriners as well. Wasn't able to link up with Andrew, unfortunately, but I was able to link up with a really good friend of mine from many, many years back who's kind of really well-known in the Las Vegas golf community. He was a All-American and national champion at UNLV, roommates with Adam Scott, and very well-connected. And, you know, it was kind of interesting. And he mentioned, you know, Jonathan, that, you know, back going to when they started Shadow Creek, the only way to gain access out there, period, was if you were a high roller at the casinos with a really, really high expenditure, so a few hundred thousand dollars. You were a whale. Just staying in the hotel did not get you access. The other, a second way was if you knew Steve Wynn. So if you knew him personally and was a VIP celebrity, you could gain access. And then the third way was to play on the UNLV golf team. And other than that, that's the only way you were getting out there. And I'll always remember when Jeremy was on the team out there, he's like, it's great. If I want to practice putting, I just drive out to the second hole and I put a bunch of balls on the green and practice putting right on the green. But he was mentioning how, like with Adam Scott and Charlie Hoffman, there's like this fraternity of UNLV golfers that Shadow Creek's kind of like hallowed grounds to them because they were able to experience that place when really there'd only be like six or seven people out there every day. And here they are getting a chance to practice and play out there with all these Hollywood celebrities. So it'll be interesting to see how the course shows on TV. I'm really excited to see the property. It's a really cool spot and has some really interesting holes for being out in the middle of the desert. So excited for the weekend.
Vegas is turning into a bit of a hot spot for tour players now. I mean, right? there are a it bunch sure of guys is. That are Xander Schauffele just mentioned that he's moving out to Vegas to make it his home base. So yeah, there are a bunch of big names moving out there. A
couple of really nice practice facilities. You know, Summerlin has a nice one. The practice facility right next door at TPC Las Vegas is really exceptional too. So, you know, most of the time in the summertime when they're traveling, they're not home, and that's when the weather is, you know, 120 degrees. So it makes sense for the winter. But with that, let's get into our gear spotlight for the week. You know, with the launch of G425 out on tour, it's another great Ping product, I'm sure, in the lineup of quite a few. But I just wanted to spend a little time on the G series of products for gear spotlight. You know, Ping, when they transitioned into the first G series product, they've had G30. There have been so many amazing Ping drivers within that G product franchise. Jonathan, have you ever gamed one of them?
I've gamed a bunch of those drivers.
I bet a lot of folks have.
For a while, Ping was like the only driver that I was really using. I've used a couple here in more recent years, just as I've kind of been tinkering. It's probably not been a good thing for me. More drives in the woods and whatnot. But yeah, it's definitely been one of my favorites. And I think the big reason why I love G products, and I think a lot of recreational golfers do as well, is because the G line has always been about forgiveness.
Yeah,
that's never been something that Ping has ever tried to skimp on. I mean, if you are a golfer who doesn't hit it out of the center of the club face routinely, Ping's always made it a lot easier to gain comparable ball speeds off the heel and the toe, and I think that's why it's been such a popular product. Is, you know, you can pick one up knowing what you're going to get.
Yep.
They really haven't tried to change the formula that much until here recently when they went to the CG shifter. It's really just been a pure forgiveness product.
But even with the CG shifter and like the 410 product, when you look at the actual mechanism of where the CG ports are located, it's located on that trailing skirt of the club, kind of on the chassis of the club or the frame, which is actually going to, it's actually going to enhance stability, not ruin it. So, exactly. You know, when you look at the design of the Ping products, I think that that's something that all of their products have to check that box. You know, you speak to Paul Wood and Marty Jurtson over at Ping, you know, about the design of the blueprint iron. And even for being such a small blade and such a small package, there was still a design objective of you've got to make it, you know, more forgiving than it should be for an iron that's this size and this package. And you got to figure out a way to do that. So, you know, ping, when you look at the first pings ever created with perimeter weighting, when you look at the first ping putter with perimeter weighting with a pocket cavity, when you start to look at these, all these products, every single one of them is about making bad shots better or making the game more enjoyable. And so that's something that I give a lot of credit to the guys over at Ping, is that they make sure that all of their products, whether they're designing for a super elite tour player like Tony Finau, or any of their tour staff, or whether they're dealing with...
Or a hack like me.
Yeah, that they have something that can fit the tour player, but a lot of their products are specialized at making the game more fun and enjoyable for most players. So, you know, this product I'm sure will be in the same family of products with G. You know, the thing with the G series products is they were very forgiving, but every iteration of them got better as far as ball speed and flight dynamics. And then a few years back, I would say the really amazing product I think they produced was G400. I think G400, G400 Max, G400 LST, all of those products in that G400 family were exceptional. We still see them in use out on tour. Quite a few actually are still out on tour, aren't they, Jonathan?
It is. It's kind of, to me, I think G400 is a lot like TaylorMade M2.
Yep.
Where you still see some 2000, products.
2016 M2, not the 2017.
M2, yes. Yeah. I would hope that people listening would know which one of the versions I'm talking about, but you're right, the 2016 version. And you still see some floating around out on tour, you know, Matthew Fitzpatrick, until last week when he switched to the Titleist TSI product. That was his driver since 2017.
Yep.
And that kind of just goes to show you that when a player keeps a driver for that long, there's a reason. And when you start to see more guys, it kind of becomes a trend that you want to pick up on. But kind of going back to the Ping product, you know, you're exactly right about the forgiveness and the ball speed. You know, that some of the other things that I feel like kind of get forgotten about when you're talking about Ping products is just the aerodynamics.
Yeah.
You think about the turbulators that they added to the crown, the Dragonfly technology, really trying to streamline that design. So while it's forgiving, it's also going to be, you know, it's also going to be efficient, reduce a lot of that drag. So the guys over at Ping, what I love that they do is that they're not afraid to go outside the industry to try and see what others are doing. You know, those turbulators, that's a design that they went over to England and they looked at the cyclists that go around the tracks during the Olympics. You know, they wear those helmets that kind of have like a fin, and they wanted to see how those fins, if you kind of added something like that to a driver, what would happen? Would it help reduce drag? And I think what they did is they found out that, yeah, it does. But again, you go outside of the industry and you're able to get some new findings and potentially add them in. The CG shifter, as you mentioned, is really smart because, again, Ping's not going to sacrifice forgiveness. So if you're moving the CG on that to give yourself a little bit more of a draw or fade bias, you know, typically in a lot of products, you have to sacrifice a little bit of something. With Ping, that's never been the case. If you move that to the draw or the fade, you're getting the same or similar stability and forgiveness. So again, just they make really smart designs, and that G is one that all golfers know. I think if you were to poll, most have probably used at least one product during their career.
Yeah, I go back, you know, one of the clients, TruSpec, is Christy Kerr, that we've worked with in the past. And, you know, every club season where a new product comes out, Jonathan, it's like this quest for a new 14 set of clubs. And sometimes clubs stay in for a few weeks. Sometimes they stay in for a few months. But I don't know of a year that she hasn't played on the LPGA Tour where her trusty Ping G30 wasn't used in at least one event. I think it ends up getting used in at least one event when she's not feeling 100% confident about her driving. She'll go back to her old trusty G30. And, you know, it's familiar and comfortable, and she goes right back to hitting fairways with it. So, you know, the G-Series product line, they've had standout golf clubs for a long time, which helped, you know, I'd say the higher handicaps and lower swing speed players. And then it evolved into being a product line that also catered to high speed players as well. while still giving for forgiveness. So what do we got for mailbag this week, Jonathan? I think we got a really cool question about launch monitors, if I remember right.
Yeah, we got a good one this week, Tim, from Eric Z from Yeah, we've got a good one this week, Tim, from Eric Seatvet on Instagram. He asks, love the recent segment on launch monitors. Are the ones under $500 reliable for a gear nut like me?
Great question. It's something that a lot of folks actually have reached out and asked. Definitely. You know, the launch monitor category has had a lot of growth in the last 5-6 years. And, you know, obviously you've got the two units which are widely considered to be the industry leaders, which would be the Foresight Quad unit, and then you've got TrackMan with their TrackMan 4 unit. Obviously, those units cost upwards of $12,000-$13,000, all the way up to $25,000, depending upon what you're looking at. So, are there options that can get to that level of accuracy for $500 or cheaper? I would say that it depends on what you're using it for. You know, Rapsodo is new to the golf industry fairly recently, but from launch monitor perspective, they've been around in baseball for quite a while, and they have a new price point conscious launch monitor that's actually pretty good. Most of these machines can give you decent ball data. You are going to get outliers. The trick is use the launch monitor and get familiar with it so that you can understand and recognize an outlier when you see it. If you see a number that doesn't make sense based upon what you saw and what you observed, then the machine probably didn't take a proper, measurement or didn't make a proper calculation. As far as club numbers, using something that is more photographic or optical based is usually, a better way to go. If you're looking for ball numbers, then something that's radar based is usually best. You've also got FlightScope, which has the Mevo unit, which we've seen, Bryson DeChambeau. That, once again, that's a $500 product. So there are quite a few, actually. What I would say is understand what the unit specializes in doing, whether it's really good at, ball numbers, really good at club numbers, what its limitations are, as far as how it calculates the different environments you're in. And then from there, once you figure out what you're trying to measure, then make a smart decision as far as which one to purchase. One thing that I think should be said is having one of these units, regardless of whether they're perfectly accurate or not, it's still a measuring stick that you can compare yourself from day to day against yourself. So if you start to notice a trend where you're generating more spin than you used to, regardless of whether the spin measurement was 100% accurate or not, just knowing that you're generating more or less spin or generating more or less ball speed than you used to is really important, because it tells you things that are going on in your golf swing. So from that perspective, I would say that if you're spending a few thousand dollars a year on golf, it probably makes sense to pick up one of these launch monitor units if you're somebody that practices and you want to get more usefulness out of your practice.
And that'll do it for episode 63 of Fully Equipped. Make sure you check out @fully_equipped on Twitter and @fullyequippedgolf on Instagram for more gear news. Thanks again for listening.